There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Text line open for you and phone line at 343-0106. And good to have the director of Alabama Marine Resources joining us now on this day after the first 2 days of Alabama's red snapper season for 2019. Director Scott Bannon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, no problem. I know that, you know, you just had a leisurely weekend kickback and that's right. Marine Resources, y'all had a heck of a weekend.
We did. We had a lot of our biological staff out doing surveys, and we had our enforcement staff out making sure everybody was following the rules. And to be honest with you, with the weather and the number of people that got to go, I think it was a fantastic red snapper opening.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because that's one of the important things about having local management is you're when you're figuring out and using the Snap app, figuring out how many fish we're catching. You know, if it's slick and calm and it's, you know, it's under 2 foot seas or a foot seas, then there's a ton of folks out. If it would have been for some reason 6 foot seas, it wouldn't have looked like that.
That's correct. And like based on this weekend's very preliminary numbers, I just pulled like a snapshot. It looks like we had an increase in the number of people that reported this year, so that's good. Now, whether that's an actual increase in the number of people that went boating between the two opening weekends last year, the second weekend last year was a little better than the first. So look at those numbers. We're up from even that June 9th weekend of last year. But it looks like this upcoming weekend, the weather may be a little difficult for us. And so, you know, we'll be able to look at those numbers, and if it goes down tremendously, we're still working towards that same goal of about 1 million pounds of fish. So it's still working towards that end game, and potentially we may add some more days, or we ensure that we're going to get those 27 days.
Yeah, I guess that's worth let's explain that to folks, too, that you have – it's not individual fish as a quota. It's actual weight, and therefore there's going to be some math involved.
There is. There's it's a pretty big math problem. The statisticians and stuff love those things. I just said, what's the number at the end? But we do work towards pounds, but it's based on the numbers of fish that are caught and then that are surveyed by our staff at the marinas and at the boat ramps. You'll see them wearing the light blue shirts with Marine Resources on it. They get links and weights and some other data that's very, very important to the state management.
All right. So with that being said, you get that information through those surveys at the dock and also through the Snapper app that's on our Outdoor Alabama or the Outdoor Alabama app in the section for the Snapper reporting. I heard some people have some issues with that on Saturday with iPhones.
They did. There was some issue with the timing and the connectivity and the speed of the phone. It's like they didn't give me all the technical details, but there were some iPhones that it would fail to connect. Android users were fine. If you went to the webpage, outdooralabama.com, and went to the Red Snapper reporting portion of that, that worked fine. So most people, if they just reloaded the app or closed out and opened it back up, they were able to use it. There is a change being pushed out today, so hopefully that will correct it for next week. So if people didn't get the opportunity to report and the app was not working, please bear with us. That information is extremely important to us, and it should be fixed for this Friday's opening.
All right. And reminding folks, too, yeah, we were Saturday, Sunday, just because that was June 1st, but for the rest of the weeks here, we're Friday, Saturday, Sunday, except for Independence Day.
That's correct. You're going to get Thursday of Independence Day. And then the next week or so, June 11th, you know, Florida's going to open, Mississippi's open, so you know, we're sharing the Gulf out there. There should be a lot of people out there enjoying the opportunity to fish.
You wonder how many people come across. You know, I had talked to you about, and we had talked last week about, or going into Memorial Day weekend, for people not to, you know, not to mess up and land their Mississippi or federal waters caught fish in Alabama. Do you know how much crossover? Do you have any kind of stats? I mean, how many Mississippi boats are in here or Florida boats are in here?
We don't really, but we did. Our enforcement staff encountered some people fishing offshore, you know, over Memorial Day weekend, that were heading back to Mississippi and that were Alabama boaters. I had some friends that asked me, hey, I want to make sure I'm doing this correctly. And so then this time of year, when we're open, if it's closer for some other people and less administratively burdensome, some Mississippi folks or Florida folks will leave out of Alabama. And I'm very confident that some Florida fishermen left out of Perdido Pass. They just had to land the fish in Alabama. They could not take them back to Florida by boat. They had to land them in Alabama. But it's a There's plenty of fish out there, so we're not trying to keep anybody from fishing. It's really about the accountability for it. Since we all have our own quotas, we're just trying to make sure that those fish are accounted for correctly in the correct state.
All right. So the results from y'all's counts and preliminary information coming in looks like, you said, a little more than last year?
It does. It looks like there was at least increased reporting. Now, if that means there's an increase in the number of people that went, I don't know. That we can tease some of that out once we get our the other survey information from the folks that took the reports at the dock. But a lot of fish were reported, which is we think there's a lot of fish out there. And so it looks like the individual number of fish was up, and the number of reports and the number of people as well that went on those boats. So what that tells me is that's a success. That means a lot of people either from Alabama or from anywhere in the southeastern United States got an opportunity to go fish this weekend.
Yeah, and what y'all are looking at, though, is you're looking at the number of people kind of observed versus the reports coming in. So the closer those two are, the more certainty you have in the numbers that you can use to say, hey, feds, y'all are overshooting this. We can quantify this number.
That's correct, because we validate it based on the surveys that are taken at the ramp versus the reports through the Snapper Check app. And then and we also do that with our for-hire, federal for-hire partners, which they opened June 1st. And looks like the charter boats had a great weekend as well. And they have 62 straight days open, you know, all week long. Just, again, tremendous opportunities for people to get to go and fish. And they report under that same system so that we can ensure that they have a future of a large number of fish to be caught off Alabama.
All right. Well, we come back from the break. I want to talk about specifically this last weekend, but in general, too, Saturday also kicked off National Fishing and Boating Week, which is, a big deal for all of us here along the Gulf Coast and nationally. We'll get some stats on that, what it means to us at home. Just a weekend like we just had, a Saturday, Sunday, with those boats that Director Bannon was talking about, that means for business, whether you fish or not, what it means for business. Thank you, Polecat. Polecat is on my team here, proof that Android is better. Yes, Polecat, I've filled in my Snapper app with an Android phone when the iPhone folks couldn't do it. That's the truth right there.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Ooh, it's cooling off here at 119. It was 96 when we started the show. 95 now, and heat index down to 98. Refreshing. Dr. Bill says expect more of this for tomorrow and maybe Wednesday, and then rain moving in the forecast and a little bit cooler temperatures coming our way. More from him in just about 12 minutes. Continue our conversation with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, and it is not only the day after the first 2 days of Alabama snapper season we're talking about, it's also National Fishing and Boating Week. And that's a big deal here. I mean, obviously in a job like yours, but for the rest of us, it's a big deal living along the northern Gulf Coast.
Oh, absolutely. Fishing and boating, I tell everyone in South Alabama, is just a way of life because we have so much access to the bay system, the rivers, and then offshore. You know, it's a boating paradise, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that makes it great here. And I talk to people who, you know, that I meet when I'm out of town or traveled or whatever. And I say, let me tell you about my home. Let me tell you, you can go, you know, you want to go in the river, you want to go in the bay, you want to go to the Gulf of Mexico, you want to sail, you want to fish, you want to water ski, you want to scuba dive. Okay, we got all that. You know, I mean, they said, right there? I said, yeah, right there in Alabama. So, you know, I'm a proud ambassador of it. And it's a great thing for our lifestyle, but it's also a great thing. It's business. I mean, this is big business.
Absolutely. Everything that's associated with boating and fishing supports the local economy. I talked to some salesmen over the last year about boat sales. They've been up. So all the associated items with boat sales, you know, the rods, the reels, the life jackets, the ski ropes, the pretty stickers, the wrap that goes on the outside of it, it's never ending. And then that's before you even put the boat in the water. You know, you have to put gas in the boat, ice in the boat, bait, all the refreshments that go with it. When your family comes from out of town and you go eat at the restaurants, I mean, the list is endless of the economic impact that boating and fishing has to Alabama. And it's not just localized. It affects the entire state because people travel here from all over, and they'll stop partway to stay in a hotel or get gas or eat at our restaurants all over the state of Alabama.
I tell you what, if y'all don't believe that the people, and I know from other states, but right here in Alabama, if you don't believe they travel, if you can be on I-65 coming into a snapper fishing weekend and look at the number of boats coming from, heck, I've seen them coming southbound up at the 59 connector up at Birmingham. People hooked up, trailering up, coming down, spending money the whole way to come fish for the weekend down here. That's a big deal.
It is, and it's important to us, and we're excited to be able to offer that opportunity to people. Again, it's a way of life here, and it also helps support the economy. And in the days of good economy, people like to get out and enjoy the recreational portion of it. Like next Saturday is free fishing day, so you can fish in Alabama's public waters for free without a fishing license for that one day. We want people to take the opportunity to experience that.
Yeah, well, listen, let me just tell you, and you know what, I would say he won't tell you, but he'll tell you too, because that's the kind of guy he is. What they're doing is they're tricking y'all, okay? They're tricking y'all with this. What they're going to do here is let you go fishing for free, and you're going to do it, and you're going to say, oh, that's why everybody likes this stuff, and then you're going to end up buying a fishing license and be one of us. I mean, y'all are like tricking people here.
It could be taken that way. and because at the end of the day, I need to sell licenses to support the economy at the Marine Resources Division.
Well, and I want to get to that, too, that selling licenses, this is how it all, I think people can, and I can roll out some numbers here on the millions and millions and millions of dollars that come in during snapper season. I think, actually, the total impact is $1 million per day when snapper season is in. I think I'm still accurate on that. It may be higher by now. But beyond that, what it means for y'all and Alabama Marine Resources when you're putting in boat ramps or working on conservation projects, this all comes through money, some excise taxes when we buy fishing rods and tackle and all that, and it comes back home to Alabama if we buy our licenses, right?
That's correct. It happens for hunting and fishing licenses. The monies that we use to provide access to hunters and fishermen, it comes through federal money, which is matching money. So the state puts up 25%, and then the federal government puts in the other 75%, and that comes from those excise taxes, some fuel taxes, tackle, ammo, guns, those type things. So the user group is paying for itself, is helping to support itself. So when we did the work down at Boggy Point Boat Ramp, you know, that money comes to us based on the number of fishing licenses that are sold per year. We have to divide that up with our freshwater counterparts. But that's how we divvy up those federal dollars. That's why selling fishing licenses is actually a critical component to supporting the management in Alabama, because it also provides access.
Yeah, I mean, y'all think about this we're buying gear. People in Alabama are buying this gear. We're already buying this. Money is going into the system. But if we don't have the number of license sales, we can't claim all our money.
That's correct. And in hunting, it seems to be dropping a little bit, so we would love for people to get reengaged in that. In fishing, it has remained fairly steady, and as always, we want to bring new people into this this great opportunity that we have here, both in salt and freshwater.
What do you think? I mean, obviously, you're in the marine side, but the steadiness of the fishing license sales, is that because saltwater's lifting the whole license sales world up, or is that this, is freshwater still doing okay, or what are the numbers?
I think it's pretty steady on both sides. For us, we sell 80,000 to 90,000 licenses a year. Probably 30,000 of those are people that buy salt and freshwater licenses, and then there's others. I don't look at the freshwater numbers as much. I was born in Kentucky, live in Alabama. Math's not my strong suit, so I try and focus on my own. But these things are vital importance, because again, that's how we access those dollars, and those boat ramps and things are not cheap.
No, and they're not. But they're of more and more demand. Or as you've educated me over time, you've said, "Listen, Sean, finding the place to actually put the boat ramp is not the big issue. It's finding what."
The location. You know, we get some funding. Who wants to have the boat ramp next to them? You know, that's a little bit of a challenge. Waterfront property is not readily accessible right now.
That's the tough thing, right? That's the tough thing that they don't deal with as much. You know, you've got some fantastic boat ramps on the river systems and up through the state on all the lakes and all that, and some really nice ramps. But that real estate is not as in demand as the stuff in Mobile and Baldwin County. And I can only imagine, I mean, you got the cost of getting the ground to have the place to actually back the boat in. But then when you start talking about acres worth of parking, that's prime real estate.
It is. It's difficult to come by. You know, there's a couple of different proposals out there for some different locations, and I hope that some of these come to fruition. I'm trying to look at being creative at some of ours to create some more parking. You know, you've always got to be taking a good look at what you're doing and saying, hey, how do I make this mousetrap better? And two more parking spots is a plus no matter what. So we're looking at every place and how do we provide that access.
Can we, you know, the term Manhattan Project is already taken, so we'll find something like the Mobile Bay Project or something, that if somebody can figure out, and I may be talking out of school here, but the stuff that you and I talk about off the radio, that if somebody could come up with some idea, some viable idea to maximize parking on any given square footage or any, you know, piece of ground next to the water, to park more vehicles in there than you would normally think side by side by side, you'd be open to hearing about that.
Absolutely. If there's some creative engineering solutions out there and somebody wants to get in touch with me, we'd be more than happy to entertain it. Because, like you said, getting the spot to put the boat in is one, but getting the spots to put the truck and trailer in is another, and that's the biggest challenge.
What do you see in your information back? Are more people, the local folks here, are more people engaged in offshore and snapper, or more people going after inshore species? What's your research show?
To be honest with you, what we see is a lot of seasonal targeting. You know, what's open, what's available. With the boats nowadays, these bay boats are very durable and can support going into the near shore, offshore range and fishing for reef fish, and then they come back in and they fish for speckled trout and red drum and flounder and all the other inshore species. Or they have a big offshore boat and they got a little boat at home that, hey, we're throwing it on the trailer, the wind's blowing, let's go to the river. We see a tremendous number of multi-species fishing out there from the same angler.
I tell you what, you could have seen them along the lines of bridge rubble on Saturday. You could have... There was more fiberglass there than maybe in the rest of the state at that point.
We ran out of parking out there as well.
That's right. Not only onshore, but offshore parking. All right. Before we go to news here, I wanted to give you a chance. Once again, this is National Fishing and Boating Week. You said the free fishing day is on Saturday. Tell people Saturday. The parameters again. They can just go?
For that day, you do not have to have a fishing license. You can go fish at a public, the river, out in the bay, those areas. Now, some pay lakes or controlled access lakes, you know, that would not apply. But any public area, you would be able to fish for free, and we want people to come and experience that opportunity.
All right, and remind folks, too, the how they get that app on their phone if they're going
to
snapper
outdoor
fishing.
Alabama, it's the symbol is a big O and a big A, and download that, and Snapper Check is available in there. And I'm pushing that this Friday and Saturday that it works for all phones, and if not, you can always go to our webpage through your phone. I actually like it a little better. It's just about as quick. It's a lighter color and easier for me to see with my old eyes, but but you still have that available and paper if you're at a public access boat ramp, you can fill out a snap or check form.
And I always appreciate your time. Thanks for making some for us, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, and we'll be right back.
Mermaids missing.
All right. So the national media now set up there. The United Kingdom in London as the awaiting protest to protest President Trump there. I don't know that how that's going to... It's going to make good video, I guess. People in London are going to protest the American president. Okay? All right. How that changes anything? You know what? In a weird way, that probably will, even amongst the base, will help President Trump. Will help. The bigger the outcry, the more wild the protests are against the president in London and elsewhere in the UK, the better it is, I think, for President Trump. I think it just frames things the way he would like to have them framed. Which, by the way, anything yet? Anything for they have they started impeachment? I mean, impeach or get off the pot, right? I mean, that would be, if they needed more, if Democrats in the House needed more cover than they just got with the, I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying, Mueller presser about the Mueller report from last week, if they don't do it now, they're not going to do it. Oh, yeah, and speaking of the president in London, somebody asked me what I thought about the new look. Okay, we'll read you the story. The cult of personality stuff, I just don't get into very much, but I know I'm one of the minority there. According to the Sun UK, this says, the U.S. president's fresh look marked a dramatic change from his trademark yellow bouffant, and fans loved it, comparing him to Michael Douglas's Gordon Gekko in the hit film Wall Street, which is, let's see... Yeah, the hair is, I can see a little bit of the homage, but I think what they want to do is go through the Gordon Gekko, greed is good, greed cuts through and clarifies the American condition. I think off the top of my head, that's what he said. So President Trump's getting some attention here on the positive, I guess, because of his hairstyle. It's all like combed straight back. It says, others pointed out the sleek style was just a result of a serious case of hat hair. President Trump had come straight from a game of golf and had only just taken off his baseball cap when he got in front of cameras. Really, do people care? It's like a whole... Now I'm seeing this. There's a whole discussion of the president's hair. Whether it was hat hair or a new look. People are saying they hope he keeps it slicked back. Other people arguing they want the president to go back to his normal hairstyle. Wow. It says according to Trump insiders, right? So Trump hairstyle insiders. There's a leaky hairstylist somewhere there with the White House. Says the hairdo is not permanent. It doesn't seem like the it says they have seen the president now since then, and he's had the old hairstyle going back, but they're discussing the press. I just, this stuff loses me. I mean, it's driving a lot of people on social media arguing pros and cons with the president's hair. I tell you, I don't care. All right. Did you see the latest here on the border? I thought this was interesting as speaking of the president. American Mirror has the story. It says the first large group from now, listen, I'm going to give you a continent here. And I'm going to give you a river, okay? And these should be non sequiturs when you first hear it. Video of the first large group from Africa wading across the Rio Grande. Story from American Mirror says a group of illegals from Angola, Cameroon, and Congo waded across the Rio Grande River into the United States, according to video from Customs and Border Protection. Video shows male and female adults walking through the water and into Texas, with several with children on their shoulders. Now, this is once again coming from U.S. Border Patrol on Twitter. Says U.S. Border Patrol agents assigned to the Del Rio sector apprehended a large group of 116 individuals from Angola, Cameroon, and Congo after they illegally crossed the Rio Grande into the U.S. territory on Thursday. Then there's an update there from the White House. According to the CBP, the first large group from Africa tried to breach the border, the United States and Mexico line. Large groups present a unique challenge for the men and women of the Del Rio sector, said Chief Paul Ortiz. This large group from Africa further demonstrates the complexity and severity of the border security and humanitarian crisis at our southwest border. You have humanitarian crisis going on, obviously, in Africa. You have them going on in South America and Central America. But here you have 116 people from three African nations. They're showing up on the southern border. There seems to be no other information from Border Patrol on how... I mean, isn't it a fair question for you to ask how those folks got to Mexico? I mean, how... What is the odyssey that would bring somebody from Angola, Cameroon, or the Congo up to the southern U.S. border to cross this? I think it's worth asking. I mean, this is not, and I know it's been spun up on Twitter like, this is a plan deal or whatever. Let's find out how it happened, because if it's not a plan deal, what does that mean about the odyssey these people have taken to be there on the southern border, coming from another continent to get here? I mean, I don't see anything more on this other than they just said they found these people on the southern border. I mean, don't you think it bears out a question of maybe there's an official way to ask something like this at the border? I would probably do through a translator, of course. Hey, how'd y'all get here? How'd you end up here? Let's back this up and tell me how you ended up here in the Del Rio sector if you're coming from Angola or Cameroon, or I mean, how the heck did you get here? I think that's a fair question. I think that one needs some more information there. All right, somebody said, did you see, and I guess they were referring back to the little bit of discussion of the cartoon Arthur that I had a week ago Saturday. I was on the Guerrilla Politics TV show with Dale Jackson, and he asked me about y'all's reaction to the Alabama Public Television pulling the same-sex rat wedding thing that took place. It's a cartoon. Arthur's a cartoon show. It's like a kid's cartoon show, right? And it was PBS has this children's show, Arthur. Alabama Public Television made a choice not to show the episode with the same-sex wedding, which I want to point out, it's rat wedding. I mean, should we be marrying rats in the first place, right? Or if somebody says they're mice, I don't know what they are. They're a rodent of some sort. Here, they're animated rodents that are getting married, but the hubbub, of course, is Mr. Ratburn and the Special Someone episode. Well, now, Birmingham First United Methodist Church will serve wedding cake and sparkling apple juice. What a cop-out that is. At the free screening of Mr. Ratburn and Special Someone on June 15th. APT showed the rerun when the episode aired, showed a rerun when the episode aired nationally. This is from our news partners at WKRG. APT showed a rerun when the episode aired nationally on May 13th. Programming director Michael McKenzie said parents trust that their children can watch the station without supervision. APT offered a similar response in 2005 when it refused to air another Arthur episode featuring a same-sex couple. How often in the animated rat world is this happening? First United senior pastor Reverend Stephanie Arnold has urged Methodists to keep struggling for full inclusion, saying, "We want to extend God's love and grace for all people." Despite a recent vote by leaders of the nation's largest Protestant denomination to strengthen its ban on gay and lesbian clergy and same-sex marriages. So there you go. So as their protest here, if you want to travel to Birmingham, June 15th, a free screening, because you couldn't go to like YouTube and watch it. No, you go up there for the free screening to have the, and you'll have cake and sparkling apple juice to watch Mr. Ratburn and the Special Someone episode. I'm really hung up still on this fact that we're marrying rats. I really don't care. It's really not the same sex thing that bothers me. It's really the fact that there's procedure for marrying rodents. that's like everybody goes past that. Like, that's okay. Everybody's good with that part. But then it's the same sex rats that... How about the rat part of it? Can we get anything there? All right, 146, coming right back. I got some texts coming in here. We'll get to these at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, a reminder, the big green deal, no, not the Green New Deal, that's AOC's thing. The big green deal, that's FM Talk 106.5's thing, is going on right now, and we've been giving you chances for a couple weeks here to get registered. You need to go do this, and if you go to our website or to our Facebook page, you can get all the details on this contest. Over $9,000 worth of items up for grab, and you can do this as easily as stopping by participating locations, dropping your name in the registration box, and doing that daily, so you increase your odds here, kind of like a Well, unlike a lotto deal for the state of Alabama. You can enter to win daily and hopefully win that outdoor HD TV and sound system, also the extra large big green egg, those Alirondack chairs and table set, the custom-made granite-topped outdoor cart for the green egg, stand-up paddleboard, two-week golf rental, week-long vacation at Johnny's Premier RV. All the details are listed on our website and how to get registered to win. So make sure you check that out, because just got a few more weeks of this to go, and then we'll be wrapping it up, and you'll be like, hey, I didn't get in. Well, go get in now. Get your name in the registration box. Stop by those participating sponsors, and hopefully we'll be drawing your name come early July. All right, 147, coming right back. We'll check in with News 5 next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's check if the cool down has happened here in the last couple minutes, because it was down from 96. No, it went the other way. It's 98 now. All right. For a second there, it dropped a couple degrees. Now it's back up a couple, 98. Feels like 101 outside. So enjoy that. And that actually hangs on for tomorrow and Wednesday, according to Dr. Bill. And it looks like by the end of the week, some rain actually moving in the forecast, which is good news for our yards and our, you know, moderating our high temperatures. So it looks like by the end of the week, high just in the upper 80s, mid to upper 80s. So it's good news. And the rain in the mix, good news for the yards. But still, chance rain may affect our weekend. But we'll get more from Dr. Bill on that. Plus, he's watching the tropics, of course. Hurricane season 2019 is rolling on. They have that area. Their watch area of interest, like a person of interest, but area of interest in the Bay of Campeche. And if anything changes on that, we'll update you with Dr. Bill. Oh, on the text line, somebody sent, Steve said, are we going to have to ban the Barber of Seville cartoon where Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd got married at the end? Now, first of all, was that not the rabbit the rabbit of Seville? It still cracks me up. Yeah, that's right. So Bugs and Elmer were married in the Rabbit of Seville. So right there at the end, right? Because it starts off with the normal situation of Elmer, I think, trying to shoot, I don't know why in this case, but he trying to shoot Bugs in this, right? And then Bugs, master of disguise, Bugs Bunny, master of disguise. Who would have known? I mean, there'd have been spies all over that could have learned from Bugs Bunny his disguises over the years and fooled Elmer into it. So, you know, good point, Steve. I do not know if there's any word if that they're going to pull that Rabbit of Seville episode. Oh, this reminds me of all the songs from it. If we only had time, maybe tomorrow morning we'll get some of the Rabbit of Seville audio from, I'm sure it's on YouTube. We'll get that and play it. Oh, also on the music side, I want to get this story in before we wrap up. There's always studies out there, because there must just be money for new studies. Dalton, that's what we're going to get in. We're going to get in the business of just offering new studies. Whatever they want to study that they'll finance, we'll do the study. And this new study found that when you listen to heavy metal when you drive, it distracts you so much that your reaction times are significantly slower. Now, is this a double-blind test? I don't think so. This is probably just a survey to get attention, a study. It says the genres of music that have the fewest negative effects on persons driving are pop and hip-hop. How about that? So pop and hip-hop, the least effects on your driving, heavy metal and classical music have the most effects on your driving. So metal, and you know, what do you define as metal too? Are we talking some Guns N' Roses? Are we talking Guar here? We talking Striper here? Or what are we talking? Talking Metallica? It keeps you focused. The Metallica, we talking Metallica? What are we talking about here? When you just say heavy metal, it sounds like just like a pawpaw thing to say. What kind of metal are we talking about here? Is it AC/DC? Is it Rammstein? I mean, okay, so they said, but heavy metal slows your reaction time. And then on the flip side, another genre I like, classical music. Listening to classical music is also a problem because according to this survey, study, I'm just picturing the people in lab coats doing this, classical music's also a problem because it makes you too relaxed and also affects your reaction time. So there it goes. Pop and hip-hop give you the normal or non-affected reaction time. Metal and classical, they affect you. Metal and classical, heavy metal music could cause a motorist to lose their cool behind the wheel. No. Let me point out, other things would cause people to lose their cool behind the wheel. If everybody's driving properly, you could listen to, unless you have some kind of tick that I don't know about, you could listen to anything and be happy, right? Well, there it is. So, hip-hop, yes. Metal and classical, no. Pop, yes. Metal and classical, no. Who knew? All right. Ooh, man, somebody's saying 99 in Spanish Fort. All right. What does somebody say? That'll make you just want to drive into a ditch to kill the noise. Well, it depends. No, I'm just saying that when you talk about metal, it's like, I mean, anybody following me here? It's pawpaw when you say just, oh, it's all metal. There is so much metal. It's like saying pop music. You can say pop music. There's a lot of different kind of pop music out there, so. Well, I don't like that study. All right, done with that study. Stupid study and close study link, and that's it. I'm done with them. Oh, Dalton on the Twitter feed, and for everybody else, but specifically my main man, and then everybody else. You see, I got the confirmation there from Sean Ross over at Yellowhammer about Governor Ivey signing off on the, not that you're interested or anything, but Governor Ivey signing off on the Daily Fantasy Sports bill.
I have seen that.
Okay.
It'd be a lie to say that I haven't refreshed Twitter a million times since they passed the bill to her desk to see when she would sign it. But the bad news for those that are trying to deposit some of their money into FanDuel or DraftKings, I've been trying that all weekend too, and they're not accepting Alabamians' money yet.
But it's okay. But it's law now. At some point in the near future,
you'd think they'd get it going as soon as possible, right?
Yeah, you would think. We don't have lotto, but you can do fantasy sports,
you can do
right?
Fantasy sports, and if they get it going this week, then that's, you got baseball, you got the NBA finals, NHL finals, so no lottery, but Alabamians can spend their hard-earned money with the daily fantasy companies.
By the way, if y'all go look at this tweet that we put out, it's from Sean Ross, who's at Yellowhammer News, yellowhammernews.com. He says this, and this guy knows his way around Montgomery. I've gotten more questions on this bill in the last month than anything else ever.
Wow.
That's more huge. Than gas tax, more than tolls on bridges, more than. So what does Alabama care about? Fantasy sports.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
It's
I'm just telling you what the surveys say. All right. Turn up that metal, and we'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 6.